Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got David Thompson with me. Hey, David.
How's it going?
Excellent. So David and I are talking on Zoom, so I hope my voice isn't like 10 times louder than his. I'm crossing my fingers. Sometimes it is. I'll try not to get too close to the mic.
It's 10 times deeper. It's 10 times better radio voice, that's for sure.
That is why my voice is louder, because microphones are sexist, and the deeper your voice, like, the louder you are, I think.
Bass boost.
It is that. It's totally the bass boost. But so I'm going to interview David today, because David wrote and directed and is the main actor performer in the film Long Distance. And Long Distance was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2019, which he and I was lucky enough to meet you at the mixer, I believe.
Yeah.
Long Distance is also in the Discover Indie Film TV series. It's in season 3, episode 9. And you should watch it right away. It's actually a wonderful film. It's really wonderfully made, and it's artistic and imaginative, and it's emotional. It's an emotional ride, which is something I think that human beings need to go on. We need to don't avoid your feelings, people.
Absolutely.
So to watch this wonderful film, go to Amazon Prime Video. Search for Discover Indie Film, go to season 3, episode 9, and it is actually in a very eclectic episode with a funny film called Friends Roman, and then a quirky film called Prom Time, and then Long Distance bats clean up there. And David and I are going to talk about Long Distance, but before we get there, I'm just going to ask him, such artistic quality in that film. I almost see it just mainly as a visual poem in a way. It's just really strikes me that way. And so what got you into film? What was your inspiration to become a filmmaker?
Well, you know, I was actually born with a camera in my hand 26 years ago. No. It really, for me, it really started. My dad got this super old VHS camera, like the super like shoulder mounted ones. Like, it was RCA, was the company. You had to load the tape in. Way back, I just recorded like my soccer practices and the other family events and everything. So that was always in the family. And at some point, you know, I don't know how it really came about, whether I asked for it or it was just kind of laying somewhere, but I like started playing around with it. And me and my friend would go out and make little claymations together, where we try to do like start, stop, like stop motion, although it ended up becoming one long take of us just like throwing stuff around and holding these clay figures and miming voices. You know, I always had a fascination with creating and performing and really like just creating something visual for other people to experience. And that kind of came out in different ways throughout the years, but it really all hit home when I took a film production class in high school, my second year and sophomore year. And that was the first time where like I had an assignment, like, hey, go out, make something and present in front of your class, you know, in front of everyone. And that was the first time where I had no instruction except for my own creativity. And at the end of the day, people had to watch this thing and give critique, and I got a grade on it. So that was like the first time, like, whoa, like there's some pressure here for the first time. It was not just me messing around. So after that assignment, after getting like a reaction from other people, I really realized why I love this art form, where I can go hide, do my own creative thing on my own, and then present this perfected final presentation that's not live, that's not me, you know, having to perform in the moment, but I can like go put all my magic into it until I'm super happy with it and then show it to other people. I think that duality of kind of some part of my my more introspective and more loner personality can mix with my more outgoing extroverted personality, and it's this perfect mix in that regard, and it's the perfect way for me to express myself.
As a kid, it sounds like you were an expressive artistic kid. Did you dabble with like school plays or anything and
you know, find? I never, it was always with much consternation. You know, it was a pretty big, like I like took piano classes and like I would perform in front of like people at recitals, and it was always like a big thing leading up to that day. It wasn't like, oh boy, I get to play in front of people. Like, oh no, I get it. I have to play in front of people. That was kind of the mentality growing up. But at some point I really flipped. I'm not quite sure when. I think probably somewhere between high school and college, where just doing that day in, day out, you know, presenting and working with other people all the time. Cause actually I'm not sure this was, I actually was homeschooled for the first 15 years of my life. So, you know, I had a homeschool community and homeschool kids to grow up with, but certainly wasn't the most day in, day out interacting with other people group. So I'm actually really thankful I had 4 years of public high school and then 3 years of college where I was like, oh, I actually interact with other people in the real world and, you know, get to learn those dynamics. It was really exciting. Like, I think a lot of people have this idea where homeschool kids go in and they're like super awkward and, you know, maybe the other people I was, but I didn't feel that way. I think I was really yearning for a big social bubble to get involved in finally. And I really dug that, but yet I didn't really gravitate towards plays. I really gravitated towards showing other people myself through my film and not like through myself as much. Although when it comes to long distance, that kind of flipped where I knew the story so well. I felt, I felt very qualified to play that role and felt very called and felt very like comfortable doing that. And it's like, this thing kind of has to come out of me in this way.
And right. Like you kind of had to, you had to be that character.
Yeah, absolutely. It would just, for one, it was just easier, you know, and two, it was like, I know exactly what to do and how to portray this and how to feel. It was almost like, although there was acting involved, like I just knew that so well. And that's kind of how it came about. It was a one man band start to finish for sure.
For sure. Before we jump into long distance though, I'll have a bunch of questions for you. First of all, so you moved out, I know from our previous talks, you moved out to California. So you actually grew up in California and you were playing with that video camera.
Yeah.
Which sounds like the perfect toy for a homeschool kid to me because you are homeschooled, but then you have this connection to the outside world through, I mean, video, I know from playing with a video camera, you know, they didn't even invent them until I was a bit older, but you always felt like you were doing something kind of extra cool and kind of out there in the world, right? When you're just because you can record it and then watch it on your TV where you watch cartoons and everything.
Absolutely. I felt like, you know, special privileges or like, you know, you're doing something really, I guess more than just like drawing a painting, like, or, you know, something. It's like, it's higher level. It feels like, cause I was always, really into computers even from a young age too and technology and wasn't quite as much into like physical mediums. Like I really gravitated towards computers. I mean, here's like a funny anecdote, like when I was a really young child, my parents bought me, there was this thing called Baby ROM, which is literally like a little CD you plug in and like very basic tutorials and like a small child to how to use a computer. Like it was like drag this shape into this box and it was like teaching a kid how to use a computer. Like my parents set me up to be computer savvy from when I was like a little baby. It was pretty hilarious. But yeah, when I found out like I can make creative things through a technological medium like the camera, you're absolutely right. Like it was a great way for me to kind of zone out and be on my own and make something, you know, point a camera at, you know, whatever it is and create a story from it. That was extremely appealing to me. And I think in the early days, I didn't quite know how much I was really into that. It was just like kind of, it became this fun pastime for me, my friend, to like make clay figures and do little plays in front of the camera. But that really slowly evolved and we got more creative. We did stop motion and started including ourselves in these little videos and really kind of expanded. And then, as I said, that high school class really brought it together. I was like, okay, I can do this.
Like,
this.
And did you experiment with like editing in camera and things like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause that's all I had was this VHS camera that it would just be start, stop, you know, and then that would play back the tape. So then I could like rewind the tape. And it was really funny. After I ran out of blank tapes, I would find old VHS tapes, like from shows and like Land Before Time, like these, like old kids shows that I didn't care about. And I would literally record over these tapes. So like out of nowhere, there'd be a little blip of like a little cartoon that I hadn't recorded over. It was pretty, pretty hilarious stuff. But, you know, making gold there even back in the day, I didn't even realize it. Just really, I mean, I still have some of those tapes today. It's just really hilarious to look back on every now and then. But yeah, so I was like, even playing with editing at that young age, just like, oh, start, stop, and what happens next? You know, and then set a new scene up. And, you know, really basic and barely even thinking about that. But I guess subconsciously we were, you know, creating different scenes. So it is pretty interesting.
And it was great training and a great way to expand the way your mind sees visuals to understand how you cut things together. And then, and by the way, what part of California were you in?
So I was born in North Carolina, and I moved to California when I was 3-4 years old. And first, I actually moved all over with my parents. I moved to San Diego first, Escondido, right outside San Diego. And then we moved to, and by the way, this is because of my dad's job. He was moving from startup company to startup company in the pharmaceutical world for a long time until he retired. But so we would just move every 2 years or so, which was became quite an interesting jolt to the system. I never really quite got grounded in for a while, but started in San Diego, moved to the Bay Area, across the Bay from San Francisco, in a community called Danville near Walnut Creek and Oakland and all that. And then we moved to Orange County, Lake Forest area. And then I moved with my mom. My parents got divorced. And I moved with my mom to Thousand Oaks. And then I went to high school the first time in Thousand Oaks, California. And then moved to Ojai, where I finished high school. And then went to Brooks Institute, the film school in Ventura, which is now closed because it went under, which is very exciting. But we all have our degrees from those who made it. So it's a little cult now of Brooks graduates.
I didn't know. I always thought Brooks was Santa Barbara. Or is that just the photography?
Brooks, yeah. So Brooks was Santa Barbara. That's where it started.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, it started as privately owned. Ernie Brooks was his name, you know, privately owned school. Wonderful. I mean, incredibly historic and incredibly good photography school that earned its name over the years and then expanded to film. And then eventually they sold it to a corporation. Which then sold it to another corporation, and that was during my time. And I literally graduated April 2016. Yeah, April 2016, and the school closed August 2016 forever. And so people who had not completed their semesters yet or hadn't completed their degrees, you know, had like 2 months left, 3 months left, or one semester left, they were out in the cold because Brooks wasn't as accredited as some other schools are in California, and being able to transfer their credits was almost impossible. So some people just like gave up and literally just like quit film because the school went under and they would have to redo like a year of school just to get their degree. So,
wow.
it was crazy, actually. It was really bad for those who were affected by it.
Thank goodness you got your degree at the perfect time there.
Yeah.
And one more observation, jumping back to what you told us, is that, I think we all know that whether you're a military kid, whatever reason someone gets moved around a lot as a kid,
yeah,
a lot of those kids turn towards the arts, I think.
Yeah.
Because you just don't have that stable home life of all the kids on the street that you play with every day. So you're going to focus on other things, whether it's painting, like you said, or drawing or video cameras. Yeah. So your parents gave you all sorts of unintentional pushes towards filmmaking, I would guess.
Absolutely. You know, they really encouraged me to do everything else too, like karate, piano, swimming, basketball, you know, which I enjoyed to many degrees, but all the while I was really into computers and cameras. That was really two things. And it's interesting how that works out in the end, because here I am editing on a computer.
Yeah, so you can share with the people, I think I knew this, that you work Your main gig is editing, as an editor, film editor.
Yeah, post-production in all its forms, really. Visual effects, editing, assistant editing. Right now I'm doing quite a few different freelance editing and visual effects gigs, actually, for different projects. So all remote, yeah. Which is absolutely crazy. Getting shipped hard drives and even just, you know, getting sent links and stuff. It's pretty interesting how it works out. But, yeah, it's fast forward, that's where I am now. But
that's where you are now, but that's where you end up. But in high school, so you take this high school class, and how cool is it that your high school had a film production class?
Absolutely. It was really great. This is a public school too, but it was a really small public school. It was called Oak Park High School. And it was actually the drama teacher also taught the film class. And it was great. It was really, really good. And he made it a very memorable experience. Probably my favorite, obviously my favorite class there. He brought up like actors that he connections with, like an actor from The Shining, like the guy who played the bartender, like the ghost bartender at The Shining. He brought him in just like talk about his experience, like all these wonderful little opportunities. It wasn't just like, you know, make a movie. He really made it special and kind of put a little Hollywood twist on it, which was great because we had some like child actors going to that school. It was really interesting. It was like, they had no idea. I was getting set up for what was coming next.
I was going to ask, did your youth of playing with your dad's video camera, did that give you an edge in that class? Or
I think Yes, that. And also, and it's something I just remembered, like, I actually got into editing a lot of stuff on iMovie, my laptop, as a kid as well. And that, along with making actually some videos for a friend, it was like this friend's little company, and he needed some like little interviews shot. This was way back when I was living in Orange County, and I just had like this basic experience of like cutting something together in iMovie and making something like for, I guess, a client, even though it was like kind of like this fun favor. It was really pretty simple, but yeah, I think I did have a kind of a backlog of experience. And I think some people were in that class probably just to get another credit, and some people actually wanted to make movies. That kind of showed as well. And there were just some really talented other filmmakers who actually are working today. That I still keep in touch with every now and then, who were in that class as well, which was very interesting.
Very cool. All right. Yeah. And that set you up perfectly for college, where you pursued a film degree.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause I knew probably my last 2 years of high school that I really want to go to a film school. So I was touring like Chapman, AFI, a few other places. And, you know, I was living actually in Ojai at that time. And I realized, wow, there's a little film school 10 minutes down the road from where I live called Brooks Institute, you know, in Ventura. And, you know, like the student body is like, what, a few hundred people. But, you know, one interesting thing is Brooks let people get hands-on from the very first moment. They have this huge soundstage. Literally, like, it used to be an old Disney lot, actually. Like, they filmed Disney movies back in the 40s here in this crazy place in the middle of this oil-filled in Ventura, which is really hilarious on its own right. But, you know, Brooks bought it and made it into this whole film studio. And there's like huge sound stages, equipment to rent out. And one thing that really pushed me to Brooks was, you know, film schools in LA, Chapman, like the first year is just like theory. You can't really get your hands on a camera or like access equipment for a whole year. And, you know, to some degree that's good, but a lot of people who went to Brooks, they were there to become a grip. It become, you know, a very trade school-esque kind of vibe to that school. And that was great for a lot of reasons. And I went in thinking I want to be a cinematographer. And, you know, I did that, put a lot of effort into a few classes like cinematography 2, 3, you know, went that kind of direction because you can go more advanced. But I took one, her name's Cecily Rhett, editing instructor. And I took her Avid editing class. And she really turned me around and made me realize, wow, I love editing more than shooting, more than directing. I love just getting this huge pile of footage. Could be anything, you know, and just turning it into a coherent, you know, impactful story. And that really put me on my course to pursue editing. So that was really cool that, you know, from the very get-go, I was able to get on my journey and not just like study like film theory and film criticism and all that. Just kind of hit the ground running. So.
Yeah. And I neglected to mention in the intro that Long Distance, your film, won Best Cinematography.
Oh, yeah.
At the Sherman Oaks Film Festival.
Yeah.
And here you went to school thinking about cinematography and then sort of leaned towards other disciplines. But
yeah, certainly,
and, of course, writing and directing in general.
Yeah.
I didn't ask. Normally I ask people, were you always were you also a story writer or you know, more into film?
Yeah, you know, I actually was. There's a few like short stories I wrote for school and stuff. And obviously loved reading as a kid, you know, loved a good fiction novel. Didn't quite enjoy nonfiction as much. But yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that because I really did enjoy writing a lot. Whatever it was, like even an essay or a short story or whatever. I really did enjoy that from a young age. So being able to translate those skills of, you know, like formatting something well so it reads well and, you know, satisfies the teacher or whatever, you know, was a requirement. I really enjoyed that process, MLA formatting, whatever. And I think some of those skills translate into film for sure. Especially just like when it comes to writing screenplays and how like less is more mentality, where you just write what you see. And it's actually the opposite of writing like a novel where you cut out all the details. Like you don't have to care about like, it was a nice, crisp, warm, you know, dazzling day. Like, no, it was like daytime, you know, person walks out the door. You know, it's interesting how the differences there took a second to really learn. But now I feel like I almost write like I edit, which is kind of a good thing and maybe kind of a bad thing, but especially for the feature film that we'll talk about later, writing that script went through many revisions, cutting out a lot of unnecessary words.
As you're writing, you say, okay, I'm going to actually edit that now.
Exactly. No, you're absolutely, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, where it's like, oh, we like, that's not going to go in the cut at all. Like, that's already too much. So you like,
well, you know, you edit, you obviously spend a lot of time editing. So you probably do know, I hope that you didn't limit yourself to shooting an edit and gave yourself choices. You probably knew exactly that you wanted to give yourself choices in the editing room.
Definitely. Definitely.
But, at Brooks, were there, so what, 3 years? I think you mentioned 3 years there, not four.
Not four. So actually, it was an all year round program. So you could go during the summer as well and graduate early. So as we talked about earlier, I'm really glad I did that, because otherwise I would have been left out in the cold. Literally, if I took one summer off, I would be I would have had a longer college
degree. Yeah, you would have had to find another school and somehow try to swing a degree out of it. Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah. And it's interesting because one school, Mount St. Mary's in L.A., did this amazing thing where they accepted Brooks students and accepted their credits and let them finish with a Brooks degree. It was really interesting. So that was a savior for some people who had like a semester or less left, but some other people were not so lucky, but, yeah.
Confirmed the 3 years, 'cause I'm curious, how many films did you shoot in those 3 years? Like, do you have a,
quite a few. Oh my gosh. Not a long list. Probably so many little assignments and so many little short scenes, right, and films I can't even remember, but we did every year. There was a big project basically. So,
right. So like one a year,
one like super big, like final thesis kind of thing, that all crescendoed with what was called, production workshop two. I think it was called, where it was like a final, you literally build a crew, you get a producer. Someone says, I'm going to be the producer. Someone says, I'm going to be the editor, director, writer, editor. And it's a whole crew. And for you, from start to finish, pre-pro to final delivery, color, sound, the whole film. And I got to be the editor during that process and the DIT on set. And so that was really cool. And so it was like this, I'm blanking on the name, which is hilarious. But
it wasn't something you'd written.
It was not something I'd written, no.
Yeah.
That was someone else who wrote it. But, you know, at Brooks, we had a whole back lot where we could like literally build a set from scratch. And there was like a whole like little alleyway, like New York alleyway, and like a little cafe scene. So there was really a lot of opportunity just to make something right on the campus grounds and not have to go out to like anywhere else. It was pretty cool. It was like a little sandbox. That's one thing I really did like about Brooks, despite some of the shortcomings or, closing. But it was literally our sandbox. You could drive in and say, hey, I want to check out Soundstage 2B today. And if no one else had, you could just go in there for a whole day and just mess around, check out lights, check out a camera, and just make something. And that was something that now costs thousands and thousands of dollars to do. And we had the luxury to do that every single day for free. Well, you know, obviously our tuition, but, you know, we had a...
Yeah, but you were getting something for your tuition. All the time, I'm sure you hear about it too, is we hear about people who are paying tuition. And then when their film comes around, they've got to budget their film.
Yeah, exactly.
And talk about a painful position for a student to be in. Whereas it sounds like at Brooks, you were paying your tuition, which might have been tough or easy. But once you had that done, then you had the sandbox to play in, and you didn't have to like scramble for equipment and scramble for locations and this and that.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking, like, another thing about Brooks was, you know, as I said, it was like very much like a trade school. Like, people went there and you really could learn how to be a good grip, a good, you know, cinematographer, like really had a lot of hands-on. But when it came to theory, which I mentioned, you didn't have to do a whole year of first, I noticed we just had one instructor, and it was Dave Schwartz, who really led the charge in like screenwriting, directing, film theory, all those elements to like make a really good, impactful arc, like story arc, and like those elements of like the pre-production, the writing. And he kind of went like a little under the radar. You know, I think a lot of people were there to just make money in the industry, become a producer, become a grip, you know, they work on Transformers 10, you know, which is great. I mean, those movies are a lot of fun and like amazing job creators and amazing to work on. And, you know, I worked on a lot of Marvel stuff, and it's this amazing excitement on set because there's so much going on and so much money being spent per second. It's like, it's really kind of a privilege to part of something like that. But, you know, some of the subtleties weren't as touched on at Brooks. And I really got to hand it to Dave Schwartz, who, you know, try as best he could, try to pound this information into us. About film theory and about screenwriting, about how to structure a story. And, you know, you don't need a bunch of exposition. And like, what is, you know, really needed to tell a good story. And I think only a few of us really got the message in. I don't know if he ever listens to this, just want to say thanks, because I really do actually literally think when I'm writing a script or even like editing, I will think back to some random little anecdote or random thing he would say about, you know, like what you need and what you don't need. I'm trying to remember some of those anecdotes now, but maybe they come to me. Something about like eating hot dogs every day. Like you don't want to give the audience the same thing over and over again, Jack. Otherwise you'll hate the hot dog. You know, just interesting stuff like that that he used that, it's funny now and funny was funny then, but also was very, very true. And I think it's lost a lot of people. So
as someone who has to watch, you know, over 1,000, I mean, I have to watch so many films per year now. It's painful because I don't let myself skip any just in case I find a hidden gem that no one else on the selection jury sees. And yeah, there'll be like a really sweet, funny, you know, they'll do something and they do it 3 more times because it worked. I'm like, nah, it worked. You do it once. Right. And then you don't do it again in film.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you get redundant, the audience just turns off.
Absolutely. And it's easier to achieve that, like new and exciting in like a shorter form. And it's like, man, when you're writing a whole feature film and try to keep it interesting, it's like you really realize like this is an art form. This takes a lot of skill and a lot of patience as well. So
especially the writing. Of course, the screenplay is the blueprint, and it is the main difference between features and shorts is the story. Is the story what's worthy? Because all the filmmaking skills that work in a short actually can work in a feature, but the screenwriting skills in a short don't even set you up to write a good feature. I think it's a whole different ball of wax.
It is true. Yeah, I mean, obviously some translates over, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, well, the instincts are, yeah. And some people are wonderful in shorts and like they have 3 acts and all that stuff. But, you know, a short can get away with like having one good idea.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically what short is, one good idea. I mean, it's great. It's so fun to make them sometimes. So you just have one good idea.
It is, and it's fun. That's why it's fun to watch them.
Absolutely.
All right. So you finish Brooks and then do you jump into a career? Do you start working at that point? Do you
almost
until you make another short afterwards?
Yeah. Well, I almost immediately do. You know, I graduate and, you know, like anyone who's gone to school for the past 20 years of their life, not, you know, full 20, but, you know, it's like that becomes your entire world is, you know, living for the next grade and living for the next, you know, high school, college. I was like, whoa, like, there's, unless I want to do a master's, there's just endless freedom now. You know, there's up to me to decide what I want to do next with like this. Like, this is all done and behind me, which is a really freeing and also like really overwhelming feeling at the same time. And for a while, you know, it took a few months like off and actually did a little gig in Ojai. Before there was Uber Eats or DoorDash in Ojai, there was this company called Ojai Food Taxi. And it was just like this all through phone or texting service where you would like call and say, hey, can you pick up so-and-so from so-and-so restaurant? And like, it was all through phone. And I did it for about 2 months, getting calls as like, go out to this restaurant, pick up this, deliver here. Like, whoa. It wasn't quite as easy as, you know, having an app like Uber to tell you what to do. But, that was pretty interesting and actually honestly kind of thankful. Got some like real ground level, good experience, like making change and dealing with people and, you know, getting to actually meet a lot of people in Ojai was actually kind of fun because otherwise I was pretty isolated. But very soon after that, there was actually a production company in Ojai called Quarter Mile Films that did a lot of TV work or work on TV shows and reality shows for Travel Channel and Speed Network, like a lot of car shows, a lot of stuff. And somehow, I mean, they're based in Ojai. And I literally just sent like a cold email saying, hey, just graduated. If you need any help, I'm here. I'd love to intern. I actually interned with them for about 6 months. And that led to me becoming an assistant editor with them for a while and working on a few shows. West Coast Customs, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, or like there was a Travel Channel show I worked on. And pretty much
that was TV editing, I'll throw in like TV editing. That's like they're throwing footage at you. Like as an assistant editor, I'm sure you were doing all the prep work and like going through tons of footage and logging it and like that's a labor intensive job. That's a real introduction to how film and TV is produced.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was really because, like, I had done a lot of that during my time and my editing classes in Brooks. So it was nice to be able to jump right into that and kind of have a working knowledge of what that looks like and what that entails. And so that was really amazing. It was like a, you know, very small, quaint, actually pretty not rushed vibe because, it, you know, it is a production company in Ohio and they take on like one show at a time. And, you know, so that was a really good introduction. I'm really thankful that there was like that little, like little, I guess, little leap pad to start from instead of jumping down to like a big, you know, production house in LA somewhere. I was able to start literally in my hometown, start working in my career field, which is really amazing. And that actually eventually translated over into me getting more gigs down in LA. And although I was living in Ohio still the time, so I was making the drive down to LA for like, you know, sometimes daily back and forth doing gigs, as a DIT on different sets, you know, offloading the footage, doing dailies work, like getting the footage backed up to hard drives on set, and then logging it on set as well and stuff like that. And that actually grew into, I had sent another cold email to a company that does dailies for big, big shows, feature films and Marvel stuff, which is really tantalizing and fun. And, you know, when you're fresh out of college and you're seeing a resume that just has like one credit and then I went to school, that's basically what your resume says. If that, you know, it's like, well, this, it kind of feels like screaming into the void and maybe eventually something will come back. So that's kind of what was my strategy. I like copy pasted like this, cover letter format that kind of worked for any job and just like changed it into email, just Google and production companies and job offers on all sorts of platforms. And eventually this, they were called Shed at the time. And, they reached back out saying like, hey, we are working on Ant-Man 2 and Black Panther in Atlanta, and we need an extra dailies operator to fly out tomorrow from LA to go to Atlanta. And could you do that? I was like, whoa. So it's like, you know, I've never done this before. I'm like, oh, it's great. It's totally fine. We just need someone. And he's something about, I don't know what it was, but they literally, within 24 hours, I had to change my whole schedule, pack my things, and get ready for a whole month in Atlanta working at Pinewood Studios in Atlanta, where they shoot all the Marvel stuff. And so that was like this crazy trial by fire, where I had just a theoretical knowledge of all the stuff that was going on, you know, and the crazy server systems and crazy hardware and software that I had never touched before, like high level, you know, stuff. I just done like Avid, Premiere, basically that's it. Like they're using Daylight, they're using all this crazy daily software and like Linux systems and, you know, offloading, onlining and just the crazy stuff, you know. And it was amazing to get thrown into that all at once. And it was quite the learning experience, quite the humbling experience, but I'm really happy that happened because like after that, it's like you go through like this trauma and you're like, oh, nothing can touch me now. Like I can do anything now, which, you know, wasn't true. Obviously I had a lot more to learn, but it felt that way.
Yeah, that's an amazing opportunity and kind of amazing that they just decided, okay, well, you had the perfect timing, obviously, right? If they were sending you out with one day's notice, that meant that, like, boy, did they need somebody.
They really did. Yeah, that's kind of what it was. So I was really thankful. And
it's a wonderful opportunity.
Just went with it. Yeah.
And so it happened to be two wonderful films, too. Who knew? You'd get to work on stuff you could be proud of.
I know, exactly. So that was really amazing. And so like that was kind of the big intro right after school. And that happened.
So that is within that 2016, year. That's within like the first year of graduation, that's, or maybe the next year, 2017?
That's within the first 2 years. So like graduated, worked for Quarter Mile Films for about a year, and then the Marvel gig happened in September 2017. Or actually, yeah, September 2017. And then literally as I'm in Atlanta working on this Marvel set, another company that I reached out to, Ingenuity Studios, who is a VFX company in Hollywood, said like, hey, we got a resume and would you be open to like doing a 3-month contract with us to get started? And I was like, whoa. And at that point, I'm just saying yes to anything that comes my way. And thankfully the stuff that came my way was really, really wonderful stuff. So basically flew back from Atlanta and then 2 days later started working at Ingenuity Studios, which carried me for about 3 years. I worked there for almost 3 years. I think that's two and a half years. Yeah. So
were you still commuting or at that point, did you get a place down in LA?
that point I actually moved a little closer. I moved to, just south of Thousand Oaks actually. So I actually still had a bit of a commute. but you know, it wasn't too bad. Basically sharing this big house with four other people from Brooks. So that was like the first big move out, coming of age event, where you're really like, whoa, you're on your own, you have a job, and that's it. So that was great. And learned a lot, had some great times, and definitely saw a lot come through those doors, ingenuity.
And I assume these jobs were full-time, and I know how they treat you young people in the industry. I mean, the hours are unbearable. So I imagine you weren't, there was no time for your own projects at that stage.
Well, you'd be surprised, although you're absolutely right. In terms of making more short films, because long distance comes later at this point, you know, I had, even back at Brooks, I had been writing this major feature film that I knew at some point I wanted to do. It was about the town I was growing up in, Ojai. So all the while, I had been writing and revising and deleting and completely scrapping and then starting over again this feature film script called Ojai. And actually, basically, I wasn't working anything except for writing that script during my downtime on this job. Like, I would literally get off from a 12-hour shift to Ingenuity and then go to this coffee shop and write for like an hour or two until I was like, okay, I can't, you know, keep my eyes open anymore. So that was going on in the background, but otherwise not too much. I had a little Blackmagic pocket 4K camera to shoot random stuff for fun, but nothing major. No.
That's what's beautiful about youth, is that you can work a long, hard day and then actually still have some energy left. That's wonderful.
Even now, I'm like, well, like, how did I do that back then? You know, it really is, even right now, kind of surprising. But I think part of it was like part of me knew I really had to make this movie, and the time was coming sooner than I thought. And you know, fast forward, worked out. But it's interesting how, you know, because like there was a lot of like interesting ideas, and like, oh, we could like maybe shoot this, or like friends hitting me up and like working on some small stuff. But it's interesting how the stuff that you really feel called to, you'll make time for, rather than putting off. And that was kind of like me in the script at that point. And
so you're focusing on the script and working, and then do you are you just regular kind of freelance or from job to job, just steady work for a while, or?
Yeah, so I literally worked at this. So fast forward to after starting Ingenuity, I stayed with Ingenuity from October 2017 until December 2019, right after long distance screen, basically, and then I went full freelance again. But during my time, you know, some life stuff was going on in the background. You know, my mom had been diagnosed with cancer. Actually, basically, right when I flew out for my Marvel gig was right when that was starting to happen. So it's kind of weird to, you know, leave the nest for the first time in a big, significant way. Once again, having been homeschooled, you know, my mom, my dad, my family, and that home world is really it's kind of my rock, like my one constant life with so much change going on. So having this kind of, although it wasn't as serious at that point, or we didn't think it was, having this thing in the background, like, hey, your mom's not doing well, and you're flying out, and you're about to move, you know, it was a lot to deal with, and a lot to think about, and almost like this guilt feeling, like, oh, leave my mom when she needs me most. You know, there's all these different feelings going on in your head, although you know you have to take these opportunities. You know your mom wants to. Your mom wants you to, you know, be happy and be successful. So, you know, it's a lot going on, especially for a youngster like I was. And so that was going on in the background. And, you know, fast forward, unfortunately, she passed away, you know, in May, next year, May 2018. Very sudden onset, very sudden, just total. It ended up being metastatic breast cancer, but, you know, tried everything, went down to Mexico and did all these different treatments down there, tried a little bit of chemotherapy in the States as well. And did a full, I mean, full battle. It was her own battle. It was her unique battle, but it was a battle. And, unfortunately I wasn't able to be there for all of it, cause I was down in LA working. So I'd come up every other weekend. And so that kind of distance, as I'm you know, getting into a short film here, but that distance between my mom and I during that time was certainly not easy, and definitely, as we'll talk about later, was the inspiration, obviously, for this film. And you know, that I think unprocessed emotion definitely came out during that time as well. So you know, I took some time off from my job at Ingenuity and kind of chilled out for about a month and just really kind of reassessed like what I want and where I'm going and who I am. And, you know, I mean, it's amazing when something that strong and solid in your life is suddenly, I mean, very, it was very sudden too. That wasn't the thing. It was like, especially for me, cause I wasn't there day to day. I would just kind of see, I would check in and, you know, the, it would just be kind of a different person each time I would see her more or less. So, that was also another big element too. But, after all that, I, for one, knew what I wanted to make out of my feature film that I was writing. And two, I knew somewhere deep down, I wanted to make some sort of ode to my mom and some sort of, you know, I didn't know how that would come out. So literally, later that year, I moved from Thousand Oaks to Playa Vista, an apartment in Playa Vista area. And it all started, actually, there was this like stock music company that had a competition. This is really funny. Had a competition for make a film in within this timeline using one of our songs. And it's like a, you know, we'll give you $10,000 worth of film equipment. And the deadline is XYZ. And I was like, I bet I could make something fun. Cause I had actually taken another month off from work during that time. And so I could make something really interesting or fun or whatever during that time. And I wasn't sure what it was. And then I realized I had all these voicemails from my mom that she left me during her time in Mexico or during my time when I was down in LA and she was in Ojai, so checking in. I never deleted them. Obviously I kept them and saved them on a hard drive. And I found a song that was very poignant on the stock music site. And I was like, you know, this isn't going to be some crazy action film or comedy. This is going to be like this visual poem. And I literally designed the audio to the short film Long Distance first before shooting anything. It was really interesting. I like made an audio story with these voicemails in this song. And so that was like my script, basically. I was like, what can I shoot to complement this audio piece? And that's
really fascinating.
Yeah.
So, cause watching Long Distance, and I mean, it feels like we're just talking, but there are, could be people listening. So I'm going to urge them to watch Long Distance. I already said how, but Long Distance does give, there's such a, I mean, in a lot of ways it is documentary also, because yeah. You're using your mom's voice and you're using, but it gives me this feeling that you are a bit of an archivist that,
yeah,
that this is, you held onto those voicemails and then, I imagine you got a hold of the childhood videos.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you built picture to this audio piece you'd created.
Yeah.
Which, fascinating. I could almost picture that being like, that's the kind of thing that would have been on This American Life. Like when they produce an audio piece, you know, with words and then sounds and music.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. Like I've always, I at some point got really drawn, probably started from when I was using the VHS camera as a child. Really love that old vintage format where it feels like, it's almost like, you know, newspaper feels like the real news because it's like black and white and it's old, rather than like, you know, reading headlines on, you know, your phone feels like less tangible and feels like less, I guess, like, you know, it's like reading a PDF on your phone or reading a book. It's like this, it feels more gritty and feels more real. And I love like shooting Polaroids and I love like old analog format. So it definitely came out quite a bit in this short film, that use of old, you know, scratchy voicemails and use of old footage. And obviously kind of the color grade that I did on all the footage too kind of matched that a little bit, but you're absolutely right.
It's, I mean, it's, I'll try not to stumble on my words too much, but I mean, it's such a beautiful and emotional experience to watch that film. And of course, I didn't really know until just now if you'd had someone do that voice of your mom for a script or if you use the actual stuff. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that it's the actual video footage of your youth, because you certainly could have shot, you know, a little boy who's, you know, who looks like themselves as a little boy anyway. And
you know,
you could have been the guy with the video camera saying, "Happy birthday, David Austin Thompson." but it's all the real fucking thing. And
it is. And I think that's kind of where this started, where like, I really made this for myself at first. You know, I really did. It was like just me processing this thing that happened. And, you know, even from a young age, I this is something I kind of didn't touch on. I would ride around my parents' car a lot, and they would play music all the time. And these are during the times I was like, you know, I was making little VHS movies, or even before. I would always like make like a music video to the song in my head. I would always like create some story or music video to the song. I think a lot of people do that, but I've always loved the blend of music and audio and visual together, and like, you know, how, you know, what visual complements this tone perfectly. I'd always loved finding that, or, you know, how to sync something to music well and emotionally make it work. And for me, like, I made that first kind of long distance just to like watch for myself. I really did, especially the audio thing, just to listen to that and just like help process that in a different way. And then, you know, then I realized like, oh, like this is actually something I could share with other people who, you know, might have a similar experience or, you know, want to see something like this. I was like, this is something that, although at first it's like, whoa, like this is very, very personal. It didn't feel too autobiographical or like too on the nose for me. Like I felt like, oh, this is like working as its own piece, and it's vague enough where it's like, you know, anyone could kind of insert themselves in the story. And even though there is, you know, David Austin Thompson, but that kind of establishes the character. I'm just going to say that's my excuse for that. So you're absolutely right though. But yeah, it's interesting how things evolve and things change and things. I think when something starts from such a pure place, like that, and it's not made with like, I'm going to sell the script because it has X, Y, and Z elements in it, which is great. But when it starts from a place of like, I'm going to make this because I know this is real and tangible and I feel this, you're always probably on a good start there. So that's
yeah, and it helps. Sounds like you had such a natural evolution of, you did the audio piece and then you added video to it. And I'm going to assume that was a process as well, because then you started shooting stuff with yourself and yeah, another character, and that probably, you know, added audio that wasn't part of the audio piece. And
yeah,
and it grew and it does create a story that's a bit different from your, in ways different from your story.
Yes.
Cause certainly the airplanes alone. Yeah. I love the way you shot that airplane as you turned it. Like that probably, yeah, got you the cinematography award right there.
Just that one shot. No, but, yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was just gonna, I should have let you speak there because I think, yeah, I hit the end. But it tells a story. Yeah, it tells a story about someone who's much further away from his mother. Like,
yeah,
you know, like it sounds like they're on in the different parts of the continent, and there's no visits and there's no connection. You can't even make it for such a crucial time. Thank God that's not the true story.
That's true. It's true. Yeah, it certainly was exaggerated and kind of heightened that feeling. Yeah.
And your instincts are so fucking good as a storyteller. Oh, I'm cursing now to make up for my lack of eloquence.
I've been trying to avoid it too. There's a few times where I almost swore too. So yeah.
Well, we're allowed to swear. It's a podcast. It's explicit. We can use anything. We can say anything we want.
Oh my gosh.
We have to be responsible. But I just have to praise the construction. Obviously, you're a talented editor, because when you hit us at the end with a lot of footage of your mom throughout your life, you know, I couldn't speak. Like my girlfriend said, is this his real story? And I was like, like I was just done, you know, there's just, yeah, you know, someone I never, absolutely, met. I am mourning her loss and,
yeah,
mourning her loss for you. And it's just, it's a beautiful thing that you did.
Well, thank you. And you know, I think it was such a wonderful process to make it. And, you know, it's like, once you get that out of your system, then it's like, oh, now I can finally move on. It's like, I don't want to make another one of those, you know, I actually want to make, you know, other stuff now. But it's interesting how sometimes I really do feel like it's like, man, I got to get this out of my system before you can move on with. I'm kind of a completionist, I guess, in that sense.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think you use the term cathartic or catharsis.
Catharsis, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it certainly was that.
Yeah, no, I have to say, it's so healthy that you did that. My I'll overshare because I feel like we have a connection, David. But
Absolutely.
No, at the beginning of COVID, I lost my best friend of 38 years to COVID at the beginning, you know, and it was a sudden shock. And, you know, I haven't had any real way to process, you know, there's been no catharsis, you know.
Yeah.
His wife and I can talk about him, but you know, when someone's been in your life since you were 12 and now you're in your 50s and they're just one day there. He was here Saturday night and then Monday morning his wife called to say he's gone. And it's like human loss is almost all great art has to do with the fragility of life, I think.
Absolutely. Well, my condolences, by the way, but,
thank you. But it's, so I applaud you that I'm glad that it was cathartic.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I said, like at some point I realized as you had that experience, like other people can relate to this and maybe somehow help process. Cause that's another thing too. I process so much stuff when I watch a good movie. It really helps. I love a movie that has a little bit of wisdom to share, you know, although I love a good, action flick as well, although sometimes they have just as much wisdom, but I love a movie that has something to share. It's not like a super on the nose message, but I love something where I can insert myself into a character and get something out of it and see something from a different way or process something better because of it. And I think a lot of good art, as you said, does that. A lot of good movies do that. So,
absolutely good lessons. And I think I joked in the intro that, you know, people should watch this film and let themselves feel something. But like, you know, we go through life and, you know, we don't have to bottle everything up. But really, we bottle a lot because that's how you function. And then, you know what? If you sit down and watch a film and it lets you just cry it out.
Yeah.
That's a catharsis that you're giving to the audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Some of my favorite films are the ones where, you know, I think the record holder is Whale Rider that I cried through the whole credits and to the parking lot. Like normally I can stop during the credits so that I can walk out of the theater with some dignity. But
sure. I've never even heard of that or seen it. Whale Rider. Right
there. Well, that, I guess I'll send you. It's from New Zealand. And it's a happy ending. It's happiness. So.
Okay. Tears of joy then. No.
Sort of, I don't know. It's just, you know, what are you going to say?
Yeah.
But awesome. We're going to hear your favorites later, but or in another podcast, actually. So I've completely derailed you with our emotional chat, but
that's great.
I assume you had a great festival run because this is a great film.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you bring that up. Absolutely. I mean, Sherman Oaks Film Festival, I believe, was one of the first to accept the film in the festival. And like, it was like, you know, a real deal, like, oh my gosh, this is like a nice festival with, you know, good leadership and exciting offerings. Like, this is very cool. Like, we're going to have a mixer and it was amazing. So you're absolutely right. The film went after, well, not after, but kind of during the same time, got accepted a few others. Another one in LA called like Los Angeles Movie Awards. And on Film Freeway, man, there are so many film festivals in Film Freeway.
I believe they say there's over 10,000 now.
Yeah. And some of them are just like, you feel like you pay the fee and you get a reward for it, is what some of them feel like. And some feel like.
sometimes that is the deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I kind of did a mass push to a few different festivals of different varieties. Yours was definitely one of the top in terms of, as I said, just presence and quality, which is amazing. And once again, man, I just remember I couldn't make it to the screening. It really sucks.
You didn't. That's actually, you were at the mixer and then I think a last second thing happened or something.
I think I was super, out of nowhere, just got super sick. And I just completely.
That makes sense. I remember your email. I told my lady tonight when she asked a question about you, I'm like, you know what? I don't know the answer to that because we didn't do a Q&A. So tonight will be like
the final Q&A
in a way, because we didn't get to we got to hang out at a bar briefly, but of course that's like 25, 30 people. So, you know,
yeah.
We both, I think we're actually, I'm going to just assume we're both extroverted introverts. So when you're at the mixer, you work the room and then you go home. You're like, okay, I'm not going to go in public for a while.
Yeah, doesn't feel that way sometimes too. But after that, one other Snoopy festival is Ojai had a short film festival, because there is the Ojai Film Festival, which is somewhat known. And then there's the Ojai Short Film Festival, which is kind of newer, and got accepted there. So, you know, obviously went up to Ojai and did that. And, you know, that was really cool because one, had some local friends come out and support and got to talk with, you know, actually a pretty big audience about the film, the process, and kind of do a little pitch about what the feature film I had, you know, had been still was writing at that point, you know, and all that. So definitely had some major success. I forget. I need to look at the poster for it, all the different awards it received.
I was going to say, you probably at the Ojai Short Film Festival, you should have done some fundraising for the feature.
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely tried to put the roots down there for sure. I think it got something at the Ojai Short. I forget. It wasn't like gold winner. I got a little golden star of some sort. I forget. Just like I got your cinematographer golden star for our best cinematography. So I got a few little things, and you know, I was just happy to share it and have that fun experience of like going to film festivals and having an experience to talk to other filmmakers too and see what was going on, and some incredibly talented people. It was kind of not humbling because I was really happy about what I put out, but just like, whoa, there's a lot of filmmakers these days. Everyone who has a camera can make a film and literally get accepted to a film festival. And it's like, well, there's a lot of us out here.
And I guess an obvious question is, so I saw you in November 2019 when everything was normal. And then the next month in December, we started to hear about something happening in China. And then January, we started to hear about it being in Europe. And then February, it was pretty much here and we were pretending it wasn't. did it affect your festival run, or were you kind of done at that point?
It only affected one. I was kind of done at that point. You know, it got accepted a few, and all of them kind of had premieres between November and like February. But yeah, right, it only affected one, where it was the Beverly Hills Film Festival, which was scheduled for like April March or April. And like right before, like I had submitted my Blu-ray for screening. I had like mailed it in. It was all ready to go. And like a week out, they're like, oh, sorry, we're going to cancel the whole thing. We have no idea when we're going to reschedule. I was like, whoa, okay. Can I have my Blu-ray back? you know, that was okay. But because there was kind of a hope that it would just be pushed like a month, you know, look how that turned out.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, no, we all thought it'd be okay.
Yeah.
We had a festival lined up in June. Film Invasion LA is every June. And, you know, in March, our deadline was March 15th, and it was like, well, COVID's hit now, but we got to have our act together by June, right? Like,
yeah,
everyone stays home for 4 weeks and it's gone, right?
Right. Yeah. So that didn't quite happen. So, and then after that, so that was 2020.
But you were shooting Ojai already.
Yeah. No. So,
oh, no. Okay. So you shot Ojai completely during lockdown.
Completely during lockdown. You know, we had that added so much expense because we had COVID testing, we had masks, we had hand sanitizer, we had daily temperature tests, and that required hiring like 3 extra people than we had ever originally planned in the budget. Oh my gosh. I mean, it was madness. But so like, I guess the timetable for reference was February, still things are, you know, nothing's happened yet lockdown wise. I just got back from another job in San Francisco. And I kind of made a commitment to myself, like, okay, I'm going to do this job, and then I'm going to try to make Ojai this year. Because, like, we had tried to shoot, actually, in November, got pushed, just couldn't quite find the right actors, and, you know, I had to do some more work, and other life stuff happened. So I said, like, we're 2020, we're going to do it 2020, and yeah, I had this whole, like, see you guys in 2020, I had, like, this little teaser I posted, you know, all the people who were following, and amazing dedicated team, Joaquin Pujol and Hala Mendoza, 2 people I went to Brooks with, you know, 2 other incredible Brooks success stories while at school. We all got together along with some of our cast and their crew as well and made this amazing pitch video. And we all recorded like, here's the movie, here's why it needs to get made, here's how much it costs, you know, X, Y, Z, and put that out in April, I think. I think that's correct. And yeah, at this point, lockdown's happening. I went up to my family house in Ohio with my stepdad and just was chilling out and just trying to figure out what is happening next. But all the while, I'm like, okay, this is going to be a month, 2 months. So I'm trying to get ahead of the game, talking to people, trying to ask people in Ohio, like, hey, can I shoot, when this is over, can I shoot your farm? Hey, can I shoot, you know? And some people were really receptive. Some people were like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, this is, you know, people, some people weren't as open to it. And other people really, I think, saw the potential and saw the pitch. So anyway, but production started in September, long story short. I was going into a whole tangent there about Ohio, but.
Right. But so by the fall, so a good 6 months into the lockdown.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I mean, you talk about the expense. I was being presumptive about a small town. I was like, well, talk about the perfect opportunity for a bubble. You're shooting a film in Ohio, about Ohio. You get 15 people, cast and crew and everyone together, get in an Airbnb, wait 2 weeks, everyone's okay. And then just like, you know, I kind of pictured that.
That's basically how it went down. Although, you know, I actually did bring a lot of people up from LA, and it ended up being a lot more than just, I mean, our biggest day, we had about 30 people in the crew. Wow. Yeah, it was, I gotta say, it went up there. And it was all thanks to so many local family friend connections that had been made in that town that came out and said, hey, you can shoot on this property for free. Hey, we'll let you use my truck for this shot. Hey, we'll let you, you know, X, Y, Z. But, you know, everything lined up really well. And I was like, man, if we don't shoot this year, we might not get a chance again. So we ate the costs, we did the tests, we did the quarantines, everything we had to do to make it happen and keep everyone, you know, safe and comfortable on set. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, thankfully, everyone else believed in it as much as I did, and they were totally happy to work in that time as well. And actually, a lot of people were really happy for the opportunity because so much, you know, big productions hadn't come back yet at that point. And so when people hear about this little indie film being shot in Ohio, they're like, sure, sign me up. I'll work for an indie rate. I'm just happy to work and get on set. So there's a lot of that mentality, which is really refreshing and great. I was really happy. And people were receptive to that as well. So that was cool. And, you know, on our biggest day, we literally had a helicopter landing in the driveway of a mansion for a scene. And, you know, I guess backtracking, this script, that the Ojai script, had just started as a script about a bunch of kids. It was like a Stranger Things-esque script about kids in Ojai. And it was always missing like a good goal for the characters and missing like a good emotional arc. And so once again, talk about kind of an autobiographical film, and although less so, after my mother passed, I literally took the Ojai script off the shelf, which was 300, like this unshootable monstrosity of a script. And I went back in and basically kind of redid the whole thing with new goals, new characters in mind, and really kind of put my experience, my loss of my mom, into the script as well in a much less autobiographical way. You know, it's you know, a movie about a kid named Ricky who moves to Ojai because his mom wants to try out some experimental treatment that's being offered in Ojai. And it turns out the experimental treatment and the organization behind it is a lot more nefarious than what they appear on the surface. That's a log line for you. But so, you know, it finally, the script had a goal and a purpose. And, you know, fast forward to being able to shoot it, everyone else was able to see that in the script. It wasn't just movie about Ojai, you know, it was really something that a lot of people were able to relate to again. And I think that was a big element in bringing people on board and getting people to really, like, the actors just jumped into it and were so, yeah, that was the one thing. Like, we had chaos, we had helicopters, we had, you know, for indie film, you know, it was amazing how many people contributed and helped make it happen. It was pretty crazy.
I don't think, you know, I can just name an indie film I've seen in the last 7 years at the festivals that actually managed to pull in a helicopter. I gotta say, that's
well, that huge, was also another accomplishment. It was another, I mean, not, it was another local Ojai connection that let that happen. As a guy who flies helicopters out of the Camarillo Airport, and, you know, hooked us up with a great deal, and, you know, literally scouted this, because there was this fantasy version of the script where a helicopter, this guy who owns this crazy mansion, who's like the antagonist, lands his helicopter in his driveway because someone's having a party at his house, right? And this was like the fantasy version, like $1 million budget. There's no way we could ever do this. Jeff, like somehow Joachim and I are scouting around, looking on Airbnb, looking for really good places for this evil mansion. Last minute, we find this Airbnb who's open to us filming at their mansion, and they're open to us landing a helicopter in the driveway. So it's like, because it's big enough. So it's like, well, now we just have to find a pilot who is comfortable doing this. And it's like, there's no way, like, this is still just, you know, ridiculous. I mean, it's CGI and this is whatever. So we're already prepared for that. And then, I don't know, we find this pilot who flies a lot for, like, football games and flies a lot for construction work as well. And he drives up, he scouts the driveway, and he's like, oh, yeah, I could fly my small chopper here. That's no problem. So it's like, oh,
wow. Is he an Ojai local who's, like, happy to help out your film?
Yeah, he's an Ojai local as well. So once again, the local hookup. Yeah, so long story short, it's, you know, it's a locally grown film, I guess you could say.
For sure. It's funny, now we're doing a super deep dive on Ojai.
Yeah, that's right.
How long was the shoot?
Shoot was from September 10th. We're coming up on the one-year anniversary of the shoot. I want to say September 12th until October 3rd we shot.
All right, so 3.5-ish, 3-4 weeks maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, right, I mean, so it felt like about a month, especially with pre-pro and everything. It felt like a good month where it was just full go.
And you get this sucker in the can, and then and then you leave California, or
you stay. I can leave Ojai. I shot my movie. I stay there for basically until July this year. So
July,
So shoot it, kind of have another just kind of chill moment where, you know, coming down from this crazy high of getting all these people out there. I mean, it was grueling. Like, people worked in super crazy hot, you know, heat wave days. Everyone's just exhausted. Everyone put their heart and soul into this thing. So we're all just chilling out. I stay up in Ojai doing a few like little remote gigs that I can source, and kind of take a break from Ojai. Like, I cannot just jump right into the edit after having been so close to it. I mean, that's just like a worse idea. So get away from it. And, you know, have just a lot of downtime. And then, yeah, basically during that time, right after I shot Ojai, actually was able to meet my current fiance. So like, life kind of had another chapter in store. After Ojai, so it happened very quickly. You know, it's a very accelerated timeline we're on here. But it's interesting how when things click, they really do. And
so you got a feature film made and met a life partner during lockdown.
Yeah, that is my lockdown story. And
that's probably not one of the better ones.
That's not everyone's story. But for me, it was just like this time of super concentrated looking inward and, you know, not having the same distractions that you normally have throughout the day. And I was like, kind of felt forced to finally do some stuff that might have been put on the back burner due to other obligations and distractions. And, you know, really was fortunate to have the opportunity, and man, could not have made this thing happen without all the people who came out to help. Like, but it wasn't a one man band, like a long distance, to tell you that much. But you're absolutely right. Yeah. So also another local Ojai connection, end up being my fiance as well. So that's interesting how this town had a lot.
You know what? It makes perfect sense, because I think everyone joked about how the COVID lockdown took a whole bunch of relationships and showed everyone what was really there. Cause all of a sudden you weren't gone 10 to 12 hours a day, 5 days a week. And then, you know, all of a sudden your partner became 24/7, 365 instead of, you know, nights and weekends.
Right.
And so it was a real make or break time, I think, for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
And so you happened to really make it. You met someone and you're like, wow, we're probably spending a ton of time together because of lockdown. So
we really were. So that we kind of went through the gauntlet together and really figured out if we could stand each other in that regard. And, you know, very quickly realized, wow, this is working. And if we can make this work, then surely we can make, you know, house in Tennessee work as well. So so yeah, I mean, really didn't start getting into the cutting of Ojai until like December, and released a little teaser trailer, and, you know, started really jumping into it, and still ongoing to this day. So
yeah, well, because you're working a lot and then doing Ojai in your spare time.
Yeah.
And you're in a nice relationship, which, you know, that deserves some time. Somehow
that takes some time too. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, that sounds really good. I'm glad to hear everything's going well, and much praise as always for long distance. Obviously, I'll trust you will send Ojai over to one of the festivals when it's ready.
Absolutely.
For sure. I look forward 100%. To seeing it.
Yeah, it's looking like probably December or January, we'll probably have a final lock.
Yeah, that's, I think the first, Film Invasion, I think the deadlines are December, January, February, and then March is the last one, so.
Yeah.
Well, I'll make sure you get a discount code. You know what I'm saying? I know people.
I appreciate it. Anyway, short notes. You guys weren't just a short film festival. You were doing features too.
Shorts and features. Correct? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll get a submission too. Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, we. Almost every night at Sherman Oaks, we do two short programs and then a feature.
That's right. I vaguely remember that.
And we are expanded to 7 nights now, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We started with, we went 2, 3, 4. Now we jumped to 7 because.
Oh, my gosh. That's a big influx of, I guess, more people submitting and more people getting accepted or spacing out differently. Or?
More people submitting, which means just a really painful process of seeing wonderful films. Well, I mean.
Yeah.
We, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm supposed to share numbers with the world or not, but like almost doubled from last year was a record, and then this year almost doubled last year, and we've got that top 100 ranking.
I was going to say that makes sense because you guys really put on a great festival.
Yeah, so and you know we used to show the best 1 in 5. Actually, it was like we showed the best 20% of what was submitted, and like this year, like. Even with a full week, I think we're going to be showing like the top 5%, and it's breaking my heart. So I think we're actually going to do a hybrid thing with some things online.
Oh, sure, that's good.
Yeah, especially let's be honest. Most of the documentaries, you can't get anyone to the theater to watch anyway. Like,
yeah, that's true. And man, that is a tough genre to like create interest in. It's interesting.
Everyone loves to watch a documentary on Netflix and nobody will. And if I said to you, oh man, there's this amazing documentary about children dying in Africa and, or actually suffering. It was in the last festival, we had one about something called nodding disease where like the child's head starts nodding and as they lose neck control and, beautifully made documentary. How am I going to get you to come out and sit in the theater for that? Like,
sure. It kind of sucks. It kind of sucks. There's a lot of good stuff to share in that category, but
yeah. So I think that'll be online. There, everyone got a preview of what the Sherman Oaks Film Festival is going to be like in 2.5 months. Geez, 2.5 months. All right, sweet. All right. Well, before I name all the websites and social media handles that people should hit, is there a way people should look up you and your work in Ojai?
Oh yeah. Kind of a universal link would just be ojaifilm.com. OJAIfilm.com. It's a link to my work site, all my links, and then a teaser trailer for the feature film as well. And soon to be an official trailer with like a full length trailer as well come soon as well. So that's in the works. So yeah, ojaifilm.com.
Ojai Film, that's right. If you live in the LA area, you know how to spell Ojai, but I bet most of the world doesn't know it's OJAI.
It's Ojai.
Well, you know, we live in New Spain.
We sure do.
Yeah. All right. Well, I will now spiel off all the things that people need to know. The first they need to know is you should watch David's film Long Distance in the Discover Indie Film TV series. So you just go to Amazon Prime Video and search for Discover Indie Film. Long Distance is in season 3, episode 9, but all 4 seasons are just wonderful short films handpicked from the festival circuit. And by the way, I'm supposed to ask, give that TV series 5 stars. You know, if you're listening to this, go on Amazon.com and give Discover Indie Film 5 stars. You did?
I absolutely did.
Wonderful.
Every single season.
Oh, nice. You're the man. It actually makes me laugh that there's like 22 filmmakers, I think, who contributed to your season. And there's like 14 five-star reviews, and she didn't even get all the filmmakers to do it. That's why I'm asking you now on the podcast. And by the way, this is the podcast. You're probably listening to this somehow. If you're still listening, give the podcast 5 stars. Subscribe and give it 5 stars, whatever thing you're listening to the podcast on. And if you want to learn more about the podcast or the Amazon Prime Video series, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIF Wins on all the platforms, or the ones that someone in his 50s can handle. There's no Slack or anybody, but it's Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And we talked about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival many times in this chat. That's every November, and you learn about it by going to shermanoaksff.com, and it's at shermanoaksff on social media. And I think I mentioned the June Festival. That's Film Invasion Los Angeles. And at filminvasionla.com, and it's at filminvasionla on social media. And I've completed my obligations.
My contract is fulfilled.
My contract is fulfilled. And I'm thanking David Austin for taking the time to discuss Long Distance and how he got where he is today as a filmmaker. Now you made a feature called Ojai. So now I guess the next one is Johnson City.
That is the joke.
I'm not the first to tell it.
But Jeff, thank you so much, by the way. This has been really, really fun. And it's great to learn more about you and just express all the stuff that needs to be expressed here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you. And I'll thank everyone for listening.
Thanks, guys.